when I started Battle Bars and then the gym, I could have stayed in my old company after he sold, probably made $500,000 a year and done nothing, worked 2 months a year, and probably retired by the time I was 50. I didn't do it because there was like something more, like I just felt it to my gut. I didn't even know what I was doing. I just was like, this is, you have to do this.
Welcome to the Tango Tango podcast. Real, raw, and unfiltered conversations with veterans and those who support them. Tune in, be inspired, and walk away stronger.
Welcome to the Tango Tango podcast. I'm your host, Lloyd Knight. This podcast is brought to us by our friends, Supply Chain Now. Thank you so much, Scott and Amanda, for allowing me to do this amazing stuff. And today we have a friend, Alex Witt. Alex is a U.S. Navy veteran and CEO of Battle Bars. Welcome, Alex.
What's up, Lloyd? Thanks for having me, man.
So I know it's an early day in Chicago. You got up early, took your kids to school, and then jumped on a podcast with me. What's the weather like in Chicago right now?
I mean, my shades are down, but I mean, it kind of looks like, ever seen The Nightmare Before Christmas? That's what it kind of looks like outside right now. I was just on a call yesterday with one of our marketing guys, and he's down in Miami, and he's on like this tower, and I look down, and there's like this water and this beautiful sun that's shining bright, and I'm like,
like, I turn your camera off.
But yeah, it's not great out.
So while we're talking about Chicago, you're originally from the area, correct?
Yeah, well, a suburb of Chicago. I always tell people I'm from Chicago. Like when I was in the military back in the day, it was like everyone always says where you're from, and I'm from Palatine, Illinois. It's the northwest suburbs. But if I say Palatine, everyone's like, I have no idea that you're from Palestine. So I just tell people Chicago, and then if they're from Chicago, like, oh yeah, what part? And I'm like, oh, now I'm going to tell them like the suburbs, and they're going to make fun of me because you can't say Chicago if you're from Palatine, you know?
Yeah. So the big question: White Sox or Cubs?
Cubs, come on, man! Like,
yeah.
They've put me through pain, just like every Chicago sports team has. But I went to the Cubs World Series game five, six, and seven. It was epic. Like game five of the World Series, the Cubs were down 3-1, and they do like a lottery for tickets, you know?
Yeah.
So like I won the lottery to go buy tickets. So I got 4 bleacher tickets, like third row in like left center field for like $160 a piece. I could have sold them for 30. I think at the highest price was $3,600 a ticket. But the problem was, is that by the time like the game was about to start, they were down 3-1 in the series. So the tickets dropped, but like at not one point, they could have offered me $10,000 a ticket, Lloyd. I would have done it. I got the opportunity to take my dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. The lifelong Cubs fan. So I took my dad and my brother. I actually took my accountant. There's a long story behind that. But I took my dad, my brother, and my buddy Matt. And but it was like, you're never going to say you got to take your dad into the World Series. And my dad, he had the greatest time ever, and they won. And I told my wife at the time, I'm like, listen, I'm going to be an absentee father. I'm going to be a terrible, terrible partner. Just give me the next week to just go on the road and remember my youth.
Yeah, I was a Cubs fan for a long time in the 70s because WGN, it was the only thing on.
Yeah.
You know, baseball and day baseball. And then I became a huge Ryan Sandberg fan.
Oh, the best.
Mark Grace, the Hawk, Ron Say.
That's right. So
that was a great team.
Ron Santa, beloved, man. I mean, Ron Santa is like the he's royalty for the Cubs. Yeah, those are good.
I even went to a couple Chicago Cub conventions with my late wife.
Get out of here.
Yeah, way back in the day.
How cool is that?
As you know, my son, the Army veteran, lives in the Chicago. So he lives about 8 blocks away from Wrigley Field. So we walk to the games when I go there during the summer.
So it's just the best, man. He's like, there's nothing better than summer. Like, even if the Cubs are not great, like, which has been like 98% of my life, I feel like, but like, even if they're not great, you can like, you can go and just take, especially with the kids. Like,
yeah, it's a great atmosphere.
And the kids,
there's nothing like Wrigley.
No, especially now, man. They have, I don't know if you've been recently, but they have completely redone the whole area, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, much needed. Yep. Very cool. Well, let's talk about your military story. So you joined the Navy at a very early age. Why the Navy?
You know, I think you're very impressionable when you're younger, you know, and I was like, well, in my younger days, I was like, I'm going to be John Rambo. Like, I loved Rambo growing up, man. Like, I thought, like, Rambo, I didn't love Rambo, right? It was like, yeah. Rambo and the Terminator were, like, the things back for me, at least in my age group. But I loved it. And I like, everyone wanted to save the world. And then you watch, like, Top Gun. And it's funny, when I was in the military, everyone that was, like, on a ship was, like, swabbing the deck. And they're, like, freaking Top Gun. Stupid rumors.
Well, I graduated from high school when Top Gun came out. So I joined the Air Force right after high school, and everybody on my bus was Navy because they fell in love with the movie and they all thought it was going to be just like Top Gun.
Yeah, it's not, dude. So I joined the Navy. You know, I wanted, I love like the thought of being possibly becoming a Navy SEAL. I loved the different, like, diverse opportunities that were there. I thought everything just was cool. Like, I was very close to being a Marine, like, very close. But then my recruit just got weirder and weirder each time I talked to him. I was like, this guy's got nuts, man. I don't know if I'll do that. I ended up joining the Navy, and, you know, man, I look back at my 18-year-old self, and, like, it's, I was just talking about this with someone the other day, that I just had my buddy graduated. He retired after 26 years of military service, and I haven't seen some of these guys in 20 years. It's so great to see them. And we're like, do you remember when you're 18, like, how stupid some of the thought processes that you had in your mind were? And we're like, what were you like, what? That's crazy. I don't know. You know, if you're 18, you can do anything. You can run through.
Yeah.
You can get into it. It doesn't matter. You'll get through it. You know, and like then your risk diversity changes as you get older.
Thanks.
So I went in as an MA, which is like Master at Arms, which is like a military police essentially. And at the time in boot camp, it was August of 2001. The next month was September 2001.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So like it was an interesting boot camp because when 9/11 happened, I was in my first like 30 days in boot camp, and we didn't really know what happened. We didn't really have cell phones. We were still in the boot camp phase, you know, where like, I'm sure you understand this. It's like, you get there, you like pick up the phone and talk for like 2 seconds, and then you hang up the phone to let them know you're there, let your family know you're okay. So that's like the phase that we were in when like the towers got hit. We knew something happened, but we didn't really know. Like, I didn't really see any videos or pictures. I didn't see any of it until like later on. So I knew it was bad. I knew it was very bad. I knew that like everything was changing. And, you know, I think like some of our like RDCs were like, which like our drill instructors were, they're pissed. They're like, we're like, why am I sitting here talking to you idiots when I should be on my ship, or I should be out, or should be here right now. So they definitely took it out on us and made sure that we were trained. But it was a good experience. And, you know, I graduated, and the MA rate for security, man, it opened up big time, like big time, which is a good and bad thing, right? There was so much opportunity for promotion and growth, but also at the same time, like, there was opportunity for promotion and growth with people who probably shouldn't be getting promoted. That's just kind of how it is, that there was just so much security needed because of the threat of terrorist attacks all across the country, and you know, the Navy's everywhere, it's worldwide, right? So all these different spots across the country, hotspots, needed security, and they needed presence, and they needed, like, whether it be physical deterrence or whatever. So I ended up going in, graduating school, and then I went to Rota, Spain, which was like,
I've been there many times.
Well, man, Lloyd, I totally took it for granted. I was, you know, 18 to 20 years old, living two blocks from the beach. I had like a brand new townhouse with a pool.
You're 18 to 20 years old.
And I'm like, I'm sitting here like complaining about it. You didn't have Taco Bell today, or like, I always tell people always ask my opinion about like how did that be successful in the military. And I'm like, listen, I didn't really have like a long career. I had like a short service career, but there is always, you know, anytime you get into a big organization, then the military is the biggest, but like, even in an organization, there's always a small group of people that complains always. There's always complainers, no matter what, because there's always something to complain about, but that's life. I always tell them, don't fall into that trap, because once you fall into that trap, it will suck you in and you will just complain your entire tour. And then that spreads and then everyone's just miserable. So like, be the positive person in the group, and people that complain, stay away from them and make sure that you make the day better for everyone. That's
yeah, it. That's good advice in the military and post-military.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's easy to enter your day and talk about all the bad things that are happening to you, but it's like, you can flip the script and talk about all the positive things you have going on and then get organized and get stuff done, you know? And sometimes it's like you just have things stacked against you because like the military is such a hurry up and wait kind of mentality and they put it on themselves. But at the same time, it's like, is your life really that bad? You get a paycheck every 2 weeks. You got a place to live. You eat food. You don't have to worry about anything. So it's like when you're young and dumb, like you just don't know, you know?
Yeah.
Right. So like, yeah, I was lived in Spain and lived on the base there, or lived on the base there for a little bit, moved off base. And man, my landlord owned a winery, and I would like, I'd go pay our rent and he'd give me a bottle of wine. And I was like,
so you only spent 2 of your 4 years there. Why'd you leave?
I would have felt guilty if I didn't do anything. There was a war going on and I'm like living in, you know, like, it was cool, but like there was this one point at the end of my tour there in Spain. We were like a secondary like hospital from like after like for Iraq, and there's lunch. I'd go pick up a bunch of these guys from like the airfield, and I'd bring them over to the hospital. And there's like, we had all these big medical tents everywhere, and I remember giving these like 3 kids a ride, and I remember like 2 of the kids were like these young like Marines. And one of them was just like, had that 1,000-yard stare, man. And he was just like, he got shot through his leg, like clear through his leg. And everyone else was talking and they're like, hey, this guy got shot. And he just like looked at me like, I don't want to talk about this, man. Like, this clearly was very traumatic for him. I remember thinking there is like, you know, everyone's got a job to do no matter where you're at, whether you're in the war zone or not, everyone has a contribution to it. But I remember just thinking, like, I didn't want to do that anymore. Like, I wanted to be in the suck, you know? I wanted to be in a little. There was a billet that opened up around that time that was started. It was called Mobile Security, where, like, you basically have, you just have to, it's like a readiness group where you essentially have to be ready on a moment's notice, and they'll send you out to anywhere they need you to. And you could be there from anywhere from a week or a couple days to months. And, that's kind of what we did, is like we went out there, we trained, and we essentially worked out for like 3 hours a day because there's nothing really to do. We worked out and we trained and did some drills and went on some boats and did some cool boat stuff. And they end up opening up what's called the Air Force has this actually. So the Air Force Ravens, you familiar with that?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they did that for the Navy. They opened it up for the Navy. And I joined that. And we were the second or the first class to ever go through it for the Navy. In Virginia Beach. It was pretty cool. So we ended up doing that, and then I got deployed to Al Basra in Iraq for what was like, you know, like 7 months at the time. And you know, it was interesting.
Yeah. What kind of security were you doing? Were you doing executive security? Were you?
Yeah, it was more like asset protection. So like in the middle of there were these oil platforms called the Al Basra oil terminal. I don't remember the other name. It was, we just called it KAOT. I just remember the acronyms because, you know, the military loves their acronyms. So there's like an acronym for everything, dude. So like I have acronym PTSD now. I don't want anyone to talk to you about acronyms. So there's ABOT and KAOT, and we get there and there's like a bunch of these like Navy SEALs like around there. They cleared the area and they're like, it's all yours, guys. We're like, well, thanks, guys. This place was the biggest dump ever. I mean, we got there. There was no sleeping. I mean, we were sleeping on metal grating. It was like,
it was totally opposite of Rota, right?
Holy, I was like, man, take me back to Rota. But like, it was like, it smelled bad. It was bad. But like, at the end of the day, I wasn't getting shot at. Like, things could be way worse. So like, we lived in this place and lived with all these Iraqis who were working on there. And there was these, you know, they were pumping out 1.8 million barrels of oil every single day. So it was absolutely was a target. We would set up security around there and we would do searches on like the fishing dhows that were there and
fire warning shots if they got within a certain like area of the oil platforms, and most of them were innocent, but others were definitely testing us, you know. But yeah, we had some interesting stories. I mean, like, we were like forgotten about. Like, the Navy definitely like didn't care about us for a long time. The first 30 days we were eating leftovers from the ship, quite literally leftovers. The ship was out way out there, and they would send us on this oil platform, they would send us food, and it was like the leftover food. It felt like they give us like breakfast sandwiches and like these trays, and it felt like a hockey puck, genuinely. And I'm like, what am I doing? So like we didn't have any MREs yet either.
Yeah.
So wow. Like, we were like malnourished like crazy. And then like all of our beards were growing, like it's like shoddy because we were still young. So it was like blotches like all over, you know. And we were showering with water bottles and warm water bottles, albeit, you know. So
pretty wild.
Crazy.
I know.
Crazy. Yeah. So you did that for 7 months, and what was next?
Then I got back and got to do some cool stuff with like our Raven teams, did security for a lot of congressmen and some delegates, and went to South America for like a few weeks and did security while they did like some environmental talks, which was, I mean, unbelievable, just beautiful. Went to some of the coolest places. I flew into, I'm going to pronounce it wrong, but it's called Ushuaia. It's the southernmost point of South America. It's like 500 miles off the coast of Antarctica. It was incredible. We flew in there and I was in the jump seats next to the pilots. And then I remember like flying down and the pilots, like all I hear is like, warning, beep, beep, warning, warning. And I'm like, what is like, they're saying warning. And the pilots were like, mess. And they were like acting like they're panicking. They were just messing with us.
Yeah.
This is warning. And there's like mountains everywhere. And there's like this running, it's big, you know?
Yeah.
And so we ended up landing, and we were the first American government jet that's ever landed on that airstrip, which is pretty cool.
Wow, very cool.
Yeah. We landed down there and hung out, and, you know, I walked around with these, like, delegates and hung out, got a day of, like, liberty to myself where I got to just explore, and, like, all these people were so interested, like, that we were Americans down there, and yeah. It was really cool. Really, really, it was a really very unique experience.
So then you decide to leave the Navy. I think you did 4 years and 3 months, if I remember right.
Yeah.
Why'd you decide to leave?
You know, I knew that I was going to end up going back to Iraq and Afghanistan or something like that. And I didn't want to do it anymore. Like, I was done. You know, and really, I met a lot of people who were like working at Blackwater when I was in, and I was making like $32,000 or something like that. And like, these guys would make $32,000 like a month. And I was like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
And I started to realize, like, you know, money matters. Like, you got to start making money in life to do stuff. And yeah, so I got out, and you know, when you leave the military, you think you go to TAPS class, right? Which the TAPS class when I was in was a joke, and I don't know. Yeah. I doubt anything has changed, you know. But you go to TAPS class, and it's like they parade all these like cops and firefighters and like government, like GS workers in front of you, and they're like, you can go make $100,000 a year after 20 years, and everyone's like, whoa, you know. And I was like, I don't want to do that. Like, so that's my only option. So what am I going to do? Like, do I go to college? Do I get a job? Like, do whatever. And ended up like getting out. I was like scouring for jobs. I went to school. I got my fire science degree and EMT license. And I was going to be a firefighter or a cop, whichever one took me first. Yeah. And ended up working at GNC. I ended up running 8 stores. They paid me $34,000 a year, and I ran it.
They manage 8 stores.
They totally took advantage of me. It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous, and I drove all over. Got gas mileage reimbursement. Never paid money. It was ridiculous.
Holy cow!
Yeah, it was brutal. So I'm the type of person, like, when I commit to something, I'm obsessed with making it right. I'm obsessed. Yeah. So at the time, I was like, all right, if I don't become a cop, I'm going to be the CEO of GNC one day. You know? Yeah. And so I was working I'd be at my main store from 8 a.m. until like 6 p.m. typically, maybe sometimes 5. And then I would leave there and I would go to school from like 6-ish until about 10 at night. And then after that, I would work at this bar called Dirty Nelly's, this Irish pub in Manhattan. And I would work there until 4 in the morning, almost nightly.
Holy cow.
I would repeat it.
I just didn't care because I was like, this, like, everyone's complaining and they're like, wait, what do you do again? Like, how often? And I was like, I just slept on a metal grating for like 6 months, dude, 7 months. Like, this is nothing to me. I don't care. I get to sleep in a bed and then go and hang out at a bar and talk to girls. And like, I was, it was fine for me. You know, I wanted to make money. I was so hungry for success. And I ended up meeting this guy at this bar. He's like, hey, like, we're starting this company. You should stop by. Like, I think you got a good personality for it. And it's a logistics company. He was telling me, I had no idea what he was talking about. He was kind of drunk. And so I was like, all right, well, I'll show up Monday. So I got there. I went to GNC, took the day off of school. I went to their office. He had no idea who I was. He didn't
remember.
I ended up like interviewing and got the job there. And they're like, well, how much do you want to make a year? I was like, I don't know. 40 or 50,000 a year. He's like, all right, well, cool. I'll pay you 45, but if you make that next year, I'll fire you. And I was like, all right. I don't know what that means, but I didn't even know what I was doing. But I was like, honestly, I was just trying to get a good job that would hold me over until I got a job as a cop or a firefighter. I end up getting there, working, and for the first month, I had no idea what they were talking about, what we were doing. I didn't know it. And then all of a sudden, one day, I'm on the phone, and I'm like, our job was trying to book trucks. Obviously, you know this, but book trucks. Yeah. Truckload companies, like trucking companies and the shippers. So we were the middlemen that owned the freight to get them onto the trucks. I remember booking my first shipment onto a truck and the feeling I got that I made a deal. I mean, we made like $50 in profit. We didn't do anything, but you know, picked up, successfully got it delivered. And I was like, wow. And I got a commission of $10 from that. And I was like, I was like, wow, I can do that. That was so easy to do. You just have to make sure that you're getting it from point A to point B. And your job is to make sure that like you service it. I was like, I can do that.
Yeah.
But I ended up just like becoming obsessed with it and went from like this company with 4 employees to we blew it up and I was 40% of our sales. And we were doing at one point almost $300 million in sales. So,
wow. And he didn't fire you after the first year.
He didn't fire me. Definitely didn't fire me at first year. We had some incredible like experiences from it and it built my life. It taught me how to like hustle and taught me how to grind and learned a lot about business. And yeah, it was pretty cool. Then we ended up selling in 2018.
All right. We'll talk about your role here shortly, but you learned sales, you learned business speak, you learned logistics. You learn probably marketing, I'm sure finance. So I'm sure that would go on to serve you very well in your current role.
100%. So
they sell the company, and what's your next step?
There is more to why the company sold. We might have talked about this before, but you know, 2016, yeah. July 7th, it was one of the most significant days of my life. Is when a friend of mine, Pat Zamboripa, who I served with, was killed in the Dallas police shootings in 2016. So it was a big day and that happened. And, you know, our business was thriving and we were just like, everything was going great. We had so many things happening and we were making so much money and I didn't have to worry about it, you know, but I still stayed in touch with all my friends. And Pat was my best friend. Like we talked all the time. He just had a baby 3 months prior to this. You know, I get this, like we were supposed to connect. I talked to him that day and he was supposed to fly up the next day because he was going to be with us at the Cubs game to watch the Cubs play the Rangers for the first time. This is when interleague play just started happening. So he's like, yeah, I got this. There's like a protest tonight. There was like a shooting that was bad and like all the cops are against it. Like it was like, yeah, I guess it happened like Louisiana. So it was a Black Lives Matter protest, but the cops were like, yeah, like we agree. This is garbage. Like we'll march with you guys. Like we'll do security, but with you. Like we know that it was wrong. You know, I wake up to like a bunch of messages and all this stuff that he was killed, and it changed the entire trajectory of my entire life. So we went from this like hard charging company to me being like, I need to do something else, and I don't like what I'm doing anymore. I need just something that makes me happy, like truly like fulfilling. So I ended up going on to Fox and Friends, and we, in like a 5-minute interview with like Tucker Carlson, raised almost $250,000 for his family. And that was like my moment to be like, you know what? I think it's time to do something else. Like if I can do a 5-minute interview with these people and talk about my friend's story, like I got a lot of friends and I got a lot of great stories. And there's gotta be other people that I'd like to be friends with that I can tell their story and help talk about it and make a cool story about it. So that's kind of what happened is like, I came back and said, I'm done. Like, I think we're ready to sell this company. And like the short version is we sold the company and
you know, I took a year off to try to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And I was investing into companies and I just made like a buttload of money. And I was like, you know, like I want to invest in things that I enjoy doing. So I was investing into real estate and this and that. And I ended up getting into cannabis investments. And I didn't really like it. I was like, I don't really understand like how they're getting so much money for these companies that aren't making any money. And I was like, this is weird. And I stumbled on Battle Bars. I didn't start Battle Bars. I stumbled on Battle Bars and I was like, I want to invest into veteran companies. And I stumbled on Battle Bars and I found like their website was so awful. It was so terrible. And it was brand new. And I ended up talking to Ian, my partner now, and him and I just got along really well. We clicked and we had the same feelings. We're like, yeah, he's like, you know, there's no protein. I'm like, yeah, there's no protein when I was in Iraq. Like I was disgusting. I was eating like Cliff Bars and MREs. It was gross. And he felt the same way. And we're like, well, we just want to make products that taste amazing. And so I looked at some of their ingredients and I was like, you know, I have a suggestion for this. And I looked at this and we kept talking and I was like, hey, listen, like, you guys just started, like, I'll give you like a little bit of investment, but I want to be the CEO of the company and I want to make the decisions because I really think you have a cool product lineup here and let's be partners. So
there's a lot more to it, but that's
some real Shark Tank stuff.
That's kind of rolled out. And, you know, I was like, oh, well, these bars are great. Like, who's not going to buy these? And then you realize like, holy shit, there is so much to do. Like, this market is so crazy. I could literally have a protein bar that I said, if you eat this, it will cure cancer. I would have competition in a minute. It's crazy. And there'd be people trying to take you out. And there's like, there'd be so many different things that you would just have to do because you got to raise money. And then when you're stuck raising money from investors, you can't go you can't really build your business while you're trying to raise money to build your business. You know, I think founders and businessmen get into a rut where they're stuck dealing with investors versus, which you respect their time, of course, but like you got to run your business at some point, you know, and stop raising money and worrying about losing money. It's like, I mean, Quest Bar and some of these other brands, they've lost their first for a few years. They lost millions of dollars, you know? So like, you can't just live in a world where like, I can't lose millions of dollars. I don't have that. I'm not like Elon Musk here, you know? I don't have the ability to just do that. So we need to get really creative with stuff.
So your product's great because it tastes good.
Thank you.
And most things that with that many good ingredients don't taste good. Where it tastes good and the ingredients are garbage.
Yeah.
Right. So kudos to you. I've tried probably four or five different bars and super impressed. So I know you believe in the product. But yeah, there's more than just having a good product.
You got to have a great product. You got to have a great mission. You know, our product, the idea behind the product, Lloyd, was we wanted to make something that was nostalgic. I want everyone, every time someone eats a bar, I want them to feel nostalgic in taste. When we were like really diving in, we had a private chef and we're talking about everything. And, you know, we source all of our own ingredients from every single supplier. We don't go out and have someone do it for us. We do it all of it ourselves. And it is a hard process. And we go get everything ourselves. We ship it ourselves. We separate ourselves. We watch it laid out on the next to the production line, every single production. We watch the mixing process and everything. And like, we have it down to a science. But in doing so, man, it is like, we're like, why don't we make something that tastes like a Rice Krispie treat? Everyone loves a Rice Krispie treat. Everyone does. So how do we make something like that? So we created this like proprietary blend of like a marshmallow style fluff that isn't too high in sugar. And my theory was like, you know, sugar isn't the worst thing for you. If, you know, what's worse than sugar is fake sugar. All these companies are putting zero sugars on their ingredients. And I'm like, yeah, but you're putting fake sugars into it. So you're not like special. Like you're not like some hero that has zero sugar in a bar. Like you didn't do anything special. You put something fake in there. You know, fake sugar versus real sugar, Lloyd, is 1/16 the cost to put into a bar. 1/16. I could save so much money if I used fake sugars, but I'm not going to do it because that's not who we are. And it hurts us, honestly. It hurts us. Yeah. It would save me money. It would make me more profitable. Absolutely. If I could use fake sugars instead of real, but we'll never do it.
But yeah, you don't want to put it in your body. So
no,
absolutely.
I'm not going to ask someone else to put it in their body. So every flavor that you eat, it tastes like a Rice Krispie treat. So like the s'mores bar is literally like you're sitting at a campfire and you eat s'mores, and the strawberry bar is like strawberry Nesquik, and the chocolate bar is supposed to taste like Cocoa Krispies, and the lemon bar is like a lemon square. We have two new bars Lloyd, and now since this is launching later on, I can tell you now, we have, this is going to be our bestseller. We've worked really hard on this. It's in partnership with Barstool Sports and Stella Blue Coffee. It's our dark chocolate espresso bar. It's the Stella
Blue. Nice. So Barstools, wow, congratulations. That's our amazing partnership.
Well, that's great. So but it has 100 milligrams of caffeine. It's dark chocolate, marshmallow espresso. It is so good, and it gives you like a nice clean kick of energy to it. It's incredible. Nice. And then another one we're launching is exclusively with Lifetime Athletic Clubs. Lifetime's our first customer. They believed in us since day one, and they're very hard to work with, like to get into. Their business is exploding, and they don't just take it. You got to have clean ingredients. You got to have this. And they took us on, and you know, when we were going through some hard times, they stuck with us. They believed in us. So when they asked me to do something, I'm like, I will do whatever you want, whatever you want. So like we made a cinnamon cereal bar for them, and you can only get it at Lifetime, but it quite literally tastes like the milk from a Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Nice.
It's like you're drinking. I mean, who didn't do that when you're a kid and you're eating like Cinnamon Toast Crunch and then you drink the milk from it?
Absolutely. Heck, I did that at the corporate office a couple of days ago.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Sure. I was like, I see it when I'm a kid, but I'm like, I just drink kids' milk. But yeah, so like, the idea is make everything.
So you source all your ingredients? I'm assuming the factory is not in China.
No tariffs, no problem here, man. You know,
all assembled in Chicago?
All throughout like the Midwest. The biggest ingredient we carry is a whey crisp. That's where you get the crispiness from. And we source it from these dairy farmers in Wisconsin. And everything is sourced all in Wisconsin. You get the best dairy from Wisconsin, you know? So that's the core ingredient. And then we get, we're actually the one ingredient that we're talking about getting from overseas, and it's by design, is from Peru, is our cocoa. And I think like to get like a really great, clean taste of chocolate, like you can get from somewhere. So like we're talking to this like Peruvian company that makes like just, it's not samples, and it is like unbelievable. And it's straight from the source. So like we're American made, but I'm okay with having our chocolate not being American made if it's absolutely insanely good. You know, I'm cool with that.
Yeah, that's neat. Here's an idea for you, because this is like super popular now, the Dubai chocolate.
Oh, we keep getting asked about that, you know.
We keep getting asked about that. It's such a hot thing. It's like pistachio. I think it's a great idea.
So what are you going to become, a defense contractor and give battle bars and MREs?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I have a funny story about that. So when we first launched, I was like grinding away calls, just trying to get in. And I got in with like Afies. And Afies wanted to buy an entire container of battle bars. And I was like, it's a big deal. But then they said, hey, listen, if I buy this and it sits in the middle of summer in a container in Kuwait in a holding pattern, will it melt? It's like 100 million degrees. Of course. And she's like, listen, be honest, because if it does, like, it's gonna be a big problem. Like, well, yeah, of course it's going to melt. It's a big hurdle for us. You don't use like crazy preservatives. We don't use something
that's so the MREs would never. Yeah, they have a shelf life of like, what, 7 years? For those non-military folks tuning in, AFES stands for Army Air Force Exchange Service. So they're their retail stores on Army and Air Force bases. And in the company I work at, I ran the AFES contracts. And yeah, it can be very difficult to deal with. And kudos for you for telling the truth, because some other suppliers wouldn't have.
Yeah, everyone always asks me like about like sales and like how have you like, because I crush sales in my old business and we're going to crush sales here. And it's like, what's the secret to it? And you're like, you know what the secret is? Is integrity. Is you be honest and you be truthful and you do what you say you're going to do. And if you make a mistake, you own it. And you say like, I made a mistake. That's it. And you handle it. And sometimes when the mistakes happen, and how truthful you are will get you more business. It eventually will get you more. Every partnership, every relationship, there's always a problem. That's not just business life, right? There's always problems that happen. I tell my kids the same thing. It's like my kids, when they make mistakes, I'm like, listen, I don't care what you do. I will literally let you do whatever you want. Just never lie to me. Tell me the truth. Tell me when there's bad things happening, and I will always get your back.
and we'll always work through it. And that's business too. So in business, like when bad things happen, tell the truth, be honest. Okay. Go and say, I will be obsessed with coming up with a solution for you. I'll have a solution for you, you know?
One of the things I learned in my day job, especially when I ran global government operations, is don't overpromise. So a lot of our competitors would overpromise, and we would look like we would lose the business. And I would be very upfront. Hey, we're not going to do this. This is why we're not going to do this. This is the barriers you're going to face. I would give them a plan, and the business would always come back because, you know, if you can't execute your overpromise, that's failing, and that's not a partnership you want to have. Where can our viewers find your bars beside Lifetime?
Obviously, battlebars.com. We're getting ready to launch on walmart.com as well. Amazon will be here in the next few months. Also, you can go to any vitamin shop in the country. They can find us. If you're in Texas, you can go to HEB. You know, HEB is a... People love their HEB in Texas, man. They just love it.
Yeah. I celebrated. I think I had a LinkedIn comment when you announced HEB. I was like, wow, two great things, man. Butter tortillas made in the store and Battle Bars.
That's right. I mean, HEB has got such a cult following. It's unbelievable. And they do such... If you want to start a grocery business, just literally stock everything that HEB does, because that company is... They're incredible, and people are so loyal to them.
I'll go to business travels to Texas, and I'll go 40 miles out of the way to go to HEB so I can stock up.
They're incredible. They're just incredible. So HEB, you can find us at HEB. We're expanding into Speedway, every Speedway in the country. That's 1,500 stores. That starts in September of this year. Different convenience stores across the country, UFC gyms, things like that. And of course, like... boutique golf courses and gyms, like CrossFit gyms across the country. You know, golf is big for us. You know, I've been golfing and not great, but I'm obsessed with, I think golf is such a great thing for veterans too, because you can't take your mind off golf while you're golfing. You have to focus in golf. Your mind can't wander. Otherwise you're going to be terrible. So you got to focus on it. And what I noticed is that every time I get to like the turn at like the ninth hole, there is nothing to eat. It's like I'm back in like the military again. It's like crackers and strawberry jam and peanut butter. And then like there's like those Nature's Valley bars that when you open them up, you're like clumps. So like I went to the golf course that I belong to, and I was like, here, why don't you try these? Everyone loved them. It's like, why am I not selling these golf courses? So we went to the PGA show in Orlando, and we sold like 200 golf courses, Battle Bars wholesale. And so like my goal by the end of this year is being over 1,000 golf courses.
Wow. Yeah. Holy cow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
So how many employees do you guys have now?
Oh man. So we have 6 actual employees, and then we have a lot of contractors and that, but like, and everyone that started with us doing like basic jobs. Like our director of operations, Elise, she started with us as our social media manager part-time. And now she's our director of operations, and you know, cause she's just like been obsessed and proved herself. And you know, she started making like X amount of dollars a month to being a salary with benefits, and I'll always provide that for everyone. And it's fun to win and say you sell your company and do all this and make millions of dollars, but it's not fun to do that by yourself. So you want to have good people at the finish line, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. We were talking earlier about Matt Bess's book, and Matt was one of the founders of Black Rifle Coffee, and in his book, he talks about at one point in time, he realized he needed to stop hiring friends and start hiring competence and subject matter experts in the area in order to quickly advance the business. Did you kind of go through that as well? And you own a gym for a while too, right?
Still own them. That's right.
Still own gyms. Yeah. Okay.
Right. I love it. We have 2 locations. We have an app launching called Move. You know, I'm a degenerate entrepreneur, man. I love it so much. And with the gym, we're into this place where it started for fun. Like I started a gym to have an office for Battle Bars, and then it was like my little sanctuary. And now it's turned into, you know, we have 400 plus members. We have 2 locations. We're adding another location. And the vision for it when I originally launched it after like I turned into a business was this could be a great like franchise operation for veterans as they transition. You know, like this could be like, hey, who knows how to do fitness? Veterans know the basics of fitness. Even the ones that were not good at fitness, they know how to do fitness. And if I give you the blueprint on how to be profitable, and all you got to do is follow instructions, and I'll manage your marketing, why not like give people an opportunity to make money and start doing something they love? So I'm going to end up franchising this eventually. And our software app will be supportive. That's coming around June this year.
What's the story behind the name?
10-40-10. You know, it's funny is that everyone always, who's non-military is like, all right, so is that like a code you use when like, people, when like Bin Laden was killed? Or whatever? What are you talking about? And like, well, the logo is like the old, like petty officer logo.
Yeah. I don't know what
that. Very similar. And like the kettlebell is like meant to be like your job description, like in the military, yeah. Like for the Navy is like, you put your symbol there. So like from the master at arms, it was like the badge or like, you know,
that's cool.
Like the Navy SEAL emblems up here or whatever. But for this, it's 10 minutes to warm up, 40 minutes to work out, and 10 minutes to cool down. That's it.
Right.
So like,
thank you. Yeah. I've named a couple things. So I've named two podcasts, including this one. I run a large veteran organization called Vetlanta, which ended up being an amazing name. I named Nightwork my own business I have. That's kind of the hardest thing I've ever done is name things.
It matters. It matters. You have to believe it. You know, like when I created this logo, I drew it on a napkin. And I remember looking at it being like, you got to trust your gut. As hard as it is, right? You got to trust in God. You got to believe that God's putting you on the right path. And like, you know, like, you know, I've been through life, not to go too far into faith-based topics, but like, I've gone through life, not like losing my faith a little bit and whatever. And, you know, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, the stuff that I have got into, when I started Battle Bars and then the gym, I could have stayed at my old company after he sold, probably made $500,000 a year and done nothing, worked 2 months a year and probably retired by the time I was 50, you know? And I didn't do it because there was like something more, like I just felt it to my gut. I didn't even know what I was doing. I just was like, you have to do this. You have to. And like people say they have like a higher calling to do something.
Yeah.
Genuinely, and I think that you probably feel that too with the stuff that you're doing, right? It's like, is it going to get you rich right away? No, it's definitely not going to get you rich right away, right?
Yeah.
Mira, it's like, this stuff ain't getting me rich right now. And everyone always thinks that I'm some billionaire. I'm like, oh, well, no, dude. When I was starting this, it was like, I was obsessed with like just getting it done. And like now I'm obsessed. I want Battle Bars to be everywhere. I want everyone to work out like we work out because we work out so safe and responsible. And I want to teach people that. And I want veterans to know that like, that scary transition feeling you have of getting out and watching your paycheck just not come anymore, that we can help you fix that. So I think like there's definitely a bigger purpose in when trusting your gut and believing that your gut is something, it's not just your gut talking and maybe it's God talking to you a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Well, Alex, I don't hawk many products that I don't have a piece in, and I have no piece of Battle Bars, but man, I love what you're doing. I love your story. It's outstanding. So I'm always telling people about Battle Bars, whether it's in my day job or if it's with all the veteran stuff. So you're doing amazing work. You know, keep it up.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're a real role model, and not too bad for a Navy cop.
You ask the guys, trust me, like the guys that I was stationed with, they're like, "You have a company and you're successful at it." Like, wait, what? You who? I was like, I don't know, but somehow it works out, right?
But, yeah, absolutely. And you deserve it. It's an amazing story. I'm moved every time I hear it. So what kind of closing comments do you want to offer our viewers?
I would ask you if you like what you heard and so want to support us, battlebars.com, or go to your local convenience or grocery like HEB and Vitamin Shop and Lifetime and CrossFit gyms or whatever, and go try some Battle Bars. You get 20% off your first order. If you're a veteran and you're confused on what your next steps are in life and you're listening to this podcast, you're doing the right things because there's guys like Lloyd who've committed their lives to making sure that veterans have a good life after they leave, you know, and that's not easy to find because there isn't a lot of support out there, or there is, it's just tough to find sometimes, but you got to be the one to search for it. So if anyone has any questions, you're always able to reach out to us on our website or shoot me an email. I try to communicate as much as I can, but I just want to see veterans succeed. I believe so strongly in people who
commit their lives to their country. And I'm a very patriotic person. I love my country with its beautiful faults that we may have and differences. And, you know, I just want to see everyone happy and succeed and earn their keep, you know? So I think when you commit your life to your country for 4 years or more, you said, I'm willing to put my life on the line, whether that's your intention or not, like you're saying, I'm willing to put my life on the line. And if you're willing to do that, I will have a beer and a shot with you wherever you may be one day.
The Tango Tango podcast is proudly sponsored by Supply Chain Now. Join the Tango Tango community for more inspiring stories. Follow us on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn. Subscribe to the Tango Tango YouTube channel and follow and listen to Tango Tango wherever you get your podcasts.